Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. It's Sunday, May 13th, 2007. Happy Mother's Day. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance, broadcasting from the Air America studios in New York City. And despite the day's celebratory nature, nearly 2,000 children have been born in this country today without the benefit of health insurance. Our friend Marion Wright Edelman tells us about a Mother's Day call to action for uninsured children, and she explains why her organization is running a 9-year-old for president. I hear you saying, thank God. Also, comedian Judy Gold thinks she's got motherhood pinned down.
I am nothing like that typical Jewish mother that I make fun of in my act. I want to be young and fun and not some secondary character in some Philip Roth novel.
We'll find out what she learned from her 25 questions for a Jewish mother, and I bet you can't listen without laughing. But first, why is one group trying to bring Mother's Day back to its roots? Well, to help answer that question, let's turn to the words of Julia Ward Howe, the 19th century activist and abolitionist you may remember for writing The Battle Hymn of the Republic. In 1870, Julia Ward Howe issued this proclamation for a day to be called Mother's Day for Peace. Arise, then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of fears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. A proper response to those words from Julia Ward Howe are other words from Julia Ward Howe, glory, glory, hallelujah. But now this special day for moms seems all about a flurry of mail order flowers and Hallmark greeting cards that drip with rose-scented sentimentality and sermons that reek with references to mothers and Bibles and tears on the Bible that accompany this day. The original intent of Mother's Day has been greatly obscured. We need it back. That's why a campaign to return to the roots of Mother's Day has been launched by the Plowshares Fund, a foundation dedicated to preventing the spread of war and weapons of mass destruction. Joining us now to tell us more is Nyla Bolas, Executive Director of the Plowshares Fund. Nyla, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you, Reverend Gaddy. It's great to be here.
Well, I first, too, want to thank you for what you're doing. We just listened to Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day proclamation, but I understand that she never lived to see it recognized formally. So how did the day actually come about?
Well, you're exactly right. And, you know, it's been so interesting doing this campaign because everyone that I talk to has just no idea of the history of Mother's Day. So, you know, when we sort of say, well, it was originally founded as Mother's Day for Peace, you know, she was a suffragist and an abolitionist. She was also a mother of 5 children. And for her, as she witnessed the death and devastation of the Civil War, she felt as a mother that sort of nothing was more painful and nothing was more powerful as the sort of maternal desire for security that mothers all possess. So that's what led her to issue the Mother's Day Proclamation and to call for a Mother's Day for Peace. And indeed, it was celebrated when she started it. It was the second Sunday of June. And the first year that it was celebrated, 1873, women from 18 cities gathered together. And her whole point was to say, you know, let's celebrate mothers as peacemakers, but let's also come together to determine peaceful solutions for war. But when it was eventually formally recognized by President Wilson some, 30 years later, the original intent had been lost.
Now, I hate to come off sounding like I'm bragging, and I'm not, but I want to assure you that my interest in talking to you today came because 3 years ago, in a local congregation, I did a sermon on Julia Ward Howe's vision for Mother's Day and learned that virtually nobody knew anything about it. That's why we want people to understand.
That's what we're hoping, that people will, in their churches, in their synagogues, their places of worship, will return to this original, the spirit, the original spirit of Mother's Day. And I think, it's especially relevant today. Here we are in the midst of unspeakable tragedy in Darfur, what's happening in Iraq, civil war in Sri Lanka, dozens of other civil wars all around the world. And the issues that Julia Ward Howe talked about are as relevant today as they were then.
Well, Nyla, given all of that, how did the peace aspect of the celebration get forgotten?
Well, it's a really good question. And, like all holidays, they sort of took on other meanings, that people piled other things on top of it. And then, kind of the commercial interest took over. And so it then became essentially, just about celebrating mothers and the opportunity to buy flowers or take mom to dinner.
Do you have any sense that people are paying attention and that they're more open to rediscovering Mother's Day for Peace?
Well, I can only tell you the response that we've gotten from this campaign has been overwhelming.
Right.
So many people are, first of all, fascinated to hear the history, and second of all, want to actually make this holiday more meaningful. I think we're sort of seeing that across the board now. There's, whether it's, from a spiritual place or from a place of wanting to put more meaning in some of these kind of, hallmark holidays, you're seeing people sort of searching for, well, what was the original intent of this? And there's been a lot of interest in going to our website and learning more about the history. And then also on our website, you will be able to meet what we're calling modern-day Mothers for Peace. And they're women like Her Majesty Queen Noor of Jordan. She's the spokesperson for this campaign. And she, as many of you know, has been working for peace in the Middle East, but also all over the world. And right now, she's particularly focusing on the plight of refugees in Darfur and in Iraq. So you can meet Queen Noor on our website and learn more about her. But then there are also women who are less well-known, but who are doing phenomenal work. I mean, people like Susan Granada, who is now living in Sri Lanka in the midst of their 30-year-old civil war. And she's working with the Nonviolent Peace Force, whose role has been essentially to try and get the Tamil Tigers, the rebels, to talk with government officials, to deal with issues like child soldiers and other really difficult things that have come sort of as a result of the civil war. And she's been having actually, quite a bit of success.
On our State of Belief website, we have a link to the Rediscover Mother's Day website. Go to stateofbelief.com. Nyla Bolas is Executive Director of the Plowshares Fund and has been our guest today. Nyla, again, I want to thank you so much for what you're doing in this work, and I also want to thank you for being with us on State of Belief.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all you're doing, for your sermon on Mother's Day, and for your efforts to educate people about this important issue.
Still to come on today's show, what makes a Jewish mother different from a non-Jewish mother? It's one of the 25 questions that comedian Judy Gold posed to mothers across the country. We'll find out the answers a little later on. But up next, I don't want you to miss this. Child advocate Marion Wright Edelman joins us for a Mother's Day call to action on behalf of our country's uninsured children. And she'll also introduce us to a presidential candidate who makes a whole lot of sense. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and you're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio. Welcome back, and Happy Mother's Day. I'm Reverend Welton Getty, and this is State of Belief. Now, if you've been searching for information on the 2008 presidential candidates, and you very well should have been, perhaps doing some Google searches and whatnot, there's a good chance you came across the website for a candidate named Susie Flynn. Mark that down. Her platform focuses on health insurance for all children, an issue she understands the importance of as a 9-year-old herself.
Our government doesn't seem to care that 9 million children have no health insurance, even though every dollar spent immunizing children against illness saves more than $16 in medical costs to make them better. Doesn't anyone see? We're wasting money and allowing children to get sick.
I am Susie Flynn. A vote for me is a vote for the 9 million uninsured children.
For more information, go to electsusie.com.
Oh, me. My only fear is that she is way too reasonable and compassionate to make this office. The law also may prevent us an actual presidential candidate by a 9-year-old girl. But there's nothing preventing the message of Susie from ringing loud and clear. It is unforgivable. It is unconscionable that the richest nation in the world allows more than 1 in 9 children to live without health insurance. The Elect Susie campaign is the brainchild of the Children's Defense Fund, which was founded by our guest who joins me in the studio right now, our friend Marion Wright. Edelman, Marion, it's good to have you back on State of Belief.
Well, it is wonderful to be here.
So if it were legal to vote a 9-year-old into executive office, would you elect Susie?
Absolutely. And what a sad state we get to where it's down to children or up to children to do what adults ought to do. But I think that we can take Susie's message and hold accountable everybody who is running for president to commit themselves right now to making sure that every child gets health care this year.
Is that what she does that the other candidates don't do?
That's right. We've got a whole lot of health insurance proposals around. Everybody's talking about national health insurance, which we should have had and should have. But meanwhile, the state children's health insurance program comes up for renewal this year. You've got children dying because of the absence of health care, and children cannot wait. They are sick today. And so Susie is saying, get on with it. Let's just get and cover all of these children and pregnant mothers.
The last time we talked together on State of Belief, we were sitting at a hotel in New Orleans. We had been discussing the neglect of the Gulf region and how children there are remain, actually, voiceless victims. But as we see from these statistics about healthcare, children are victims of institutional neglect all over the nation. Marion, how does that happen?
Well, I ask myself that every day. I mean, how is it that this country is unwilling to save money and save children? How is it that we have in the last 2 months seen 2 children die, one in Mississippi and one in Prince George's County, from toothaches that became tooth abscesses that infected their bodily organs and killed them for want of a dentist and for want of health insurance? And another child who fell through the cracks of our current child health non-system. Mother tried to do everything right, tried to renew coverage 2 months before it was lapsing because her child had kidney cancer, went 6 months in Texas without that coverage, and for 4 months that boy got no chemotherapy treatment, died. A 6-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old. I just think it's time to say enough. This is not a political partisan issue. This is not a pay-go issue. This is a fundamental decency, compassion issue. Children are dying. They can't wait for us to reach the consensus on national health insurance for everybody, which we should have. We can act now to make sure that children don't continue to suffer and die.
You know, it seems to me like it makes sense financially to have Americans' children insured rather than uninsured. Why would the government ignore what is essentially a way to save money?
Because enough of us are not raising heck. Texas has turned back $982 million, or not taken $982 million, and is cutting back hundreds of thousands of children, tens of thousands of children, did 200,000 a couple of years ago. And we've been trying to get that back, but now they've cut off tens of thousands more. Texas knows that if it spends $95 or gets preventive health care for an asthma child, that's going to be a lot cheaper than $7,500 of hospital treatment, which is the average level of stay. That little boy in Prince George's County who died for want of an $80 tooth extraction ended up staying 5 weeks in a children's hospital at $250,000. You know, we pay for it in emergency care. We pay for it in uncompensated care. We pay for it in school dropouts. We pay for it in the mental health problems that are unaddressed, you know, and mental health needs of Katrina's children 20 months later are still out there. That what happened down at Virginia Tech, suppose that fellow had gotten early diagnosis and treatment of his mental health problems, that might have been prevented. It's absolutely without sense and is absolutely without decency that we let this go on.
As a part of a celebration on Mother's Day weekend, if you were addressing a joint session of Congress, what would you say to them?
You've got a chance to do something that is sensible, smart, cost-effective, and just. You have a chance this year, members of Congress, to cover every child, 90% of whose parents work every day playing by the rule. You have a chance to create a level playing field by giving all children, not just some, all medically necessary services. You have a chance to make it simple, easy, rather than hard for parents to take care of their children and to make sure that they are able to perform in school and to stay healthy. And you have a chance to win something on a bipartisan basis, to make a down payment on something that the American public really wants and that will save us money and show that you can govern.
Now, this is not a hypothetical situation. You're talking to listeners of State of Belief. What's your call to action for us?
Get on the phone, email your senator and congressman, and say you cover every child this year. God didn't say some or half or all, those of us who are people of faith. I don't think Amos would accept that, and I sure don't think Jesus would accept that, or any of the great faiths would accept that. To say we can't afford to do this when we know it's going to save money and be cost-effective, they didn't pay as we went to Iraq and Afghanistan. They didn't pay for that drug benefit, but it was going to mostly, you know, help drug companies. They didn't pay for a whole lot of things, and we should not change the locks on the gates as children come up and want to get health care. So please email them, please call them, and please write, and let them hear a ruckus and say, just do it. Just do it.
Marian Wright Edelman, a lifelong advocate for children in America's disadvantaged, is going to stay with us for a few more moments. When we continue this conversation, we're going to find out how Children's Defense Fund is taking this fight to Congress. We'll talk some more about how all of us can help. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
Your voice. Go to stateofbelief.com to send us an email or call us at 212-871-8280.
Welcome back. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief. Marian Wright Edelman is still with us. Yes, it's Mother's Day, but we felt that a focus on mothers would be incomplete without an equal focus on children. With so many mothers working two and three jobs, and still 9 million uninsured children in this country, the day becomes a rather hollow celebration if we neglect these truths. Now, Marian, when you founded the Children's Defense Fund, you knew you'd be advocating on Capitol Hill. Now the All Healthy Children Act has been introduced to Congress. What would this legislation do if it becomes law?
The All Healthy Children's Act, the House bill number is 1688, would cover every child. It would provide every child a guaranteed equal benefit package that includes mental, dental, and regular physical health problems. That would cover physical health problems. Right now, you can have two children in the same families. One's guaranteed a benefit package under Medicaid, and the other, none of these things, and can be put on a waiting list. We would correct that. Third, we'd overcome the bureaucratic barriers. We would automatically enroll children at birth if they're in any other means-tested program. But to make it easy rather than harder, you wouldn't believe the stress of families and mothers and fathers trying to get through this bureaucratic maze that results in 5 to 6 million children currently eligible for either of these two programs, one of these two programs, unable to get it. And the last thing we would do, we would really cover all pregnant mothers, and we would try to equalize benefit rates, provider reimbursement rates. So this is the mechanism based on good children's policy for covering every child and making sure they get all medically necessary services. 1688, and we hope everybody will say pass it.
A lot of the listeners to this show think that because there's been a change in the majority in Congress, that virtually everything has changed. Does this piece of legislation have a better chance of passing now? And if not, what are the challenges? Or if even if it has a better chance, what are the challenges now?
Well, the challenges are very big. It does have a chance if we make it have a chance. If we let enough noise be heard and enough emails get in there and enough calls in to Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid, we can move it along. The challenges are great because we wanted a simple reauthorization of CHIP. The president wants to cut CHIP. So everybody says, don't rock the boat. You're not going to be able to get a bill through that the president won't veto. Let the president do what he's going to do. Let's do what we should do. And then we'll figure out the next step. But secondly, they claim we don't have quite enough money. Now, the Democrats have come up and they're proposing $50 billion, but they've got to find a way to pay for it. That won't cover all children. We need $70 billion on top of cost of living. But we can find it. We find money for whatever we want to find. So again, it's up to the voters to make that noise. And the third thing is that people don't want to really simplify and meld the two children's health programs together. But 22 states are already moving in that direction. We don't want to do change. That's the basic thing. And we have a vision deficit on the outside and the inside. But I think that the biggest thing is, can you find the money? And answer is, yeah, we can find the money in the same place where we found it to go to war and where we found it to give it to the non-needy. And we should not make them find it for children. But, you know, we can make it happen. This is one we can win. We don't know how to solve a lot of other things right now, but this is one we can succeed at.
Now, I'm going to engage in intentional redundancy, that there are people sitting there like me and listening to you and saying that makes so much sense and that's such a great act of compassion on our part. I want to do that, but I want to be very sure I know what to say to my member of Congress. Tell me again what I need to say.
You should tell your member of Congress that you want them to support health coverage, guaranteed health coverage for all. The key issue is all children, and to guarantee all medically necessary services and to make it simpler so that mothers on Mother's Day and fathers on Father's Day don't have to choose between their rent or their house payment and their children's health. It's time to make a down payment on health insurance for all by starting with our children whose childhoods cannot wait.
For more information on the Children's Defense Fund's All Healthy Children Act, go to stateofbelief.com. We've also got a link to the Elect Susie website there. Our guest has been Marion Wright Edelman, founder of the Children's Defense Fund. Marion, it's not only always a pleasure to talk with you. I come away from these conversations grateful for you and inspired by you. Thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's turn to the back pages. It's time for a look at pregame prayers, faith on the field, and Hail Mary passes in the State of Belief Sports Report.
With the Cleveland Cavaliers looking like probable winners in the current NBA playoff series against the New Jersey Nets, we thought this story was appropriate for this week's Sports Report. Gosh, I've wanted to do one of these all my life. You see, it appears there's a new trend surrounding the marketing of Cleveland's most popular player, possibly the most popular player in all of basketball. LeBron James is often referred to as the chosen one of the sport. Companies like Nike have taken that nickname and pushed it into a not-so-subtle blend of marketing and religion. Take, for instance, the TV ad with LeBron James flying through the aisles of a church showing off his sneakers. Or how about the Cleveland Plain Dealer releasing what they call the King James Statistical Bible? There's even a big LeBron James billboard in Cleveland that proclaims, "Thou shalt not bear false witness." Now, so far, LeBron says he's been comfortable with the way he's been marketed. But our question is, are you comfortable with it? We're talking to everyone here. Every one of you has an opinion. Do people of faith or people of non-faith take offense at the use of religious imagery in selling a professional sports star? Do non-believers or believers take umbrage with the melding of specifically Christian language into popular entertainment? Or do you just take it in stride? Well, it's just another part of our culture. We want to know what you think. Give us a call at 212-871-8280, 212-871-8280, or email us at stateofbelief.com. Let us know where you stand, because we'd love to continue this conversation with you. Up next, they say imitation is the greatest form of flattery, so comedian Judy Gold's mother must be very, very flattered.
You see, my daughter was spending time with someone I really didn't like. I don't know why I didn't like him, I just knew he was not the right one. Yes, he was Jewish, but he was all wrong.
Judy joins us to celebrate her mother through mimicry. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio.
State of Belief, once a week, not enough? Check out our website, stateofbelief.com.
Growing up, I thought that Roosevelt was a Jewish name. I was so proud to have a first lady who was Jewish like me and such a good person.
Welcome back to State of Belief on Mother's Day. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's a clip from Judy Gold's one-woman show, 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. The show is really based on one question that Judy has long asked herself. Are there any Jewish mothers out there like me, or are they all like my mother? Now the show and that central question have been turned into a book of the same name, co-written by Kate Moira Ryan and our guest, the Emmy-winning writer and comedian Judy Gold, who joins us in the studio. Now, the fact is, I like Judy's introduction of herself. She writes in her show and new book, "I am a 6'3" kosher stand-up comedian bringing up two kids on the Upper West Side of Manhattan with my former partner, Wendy. I have a 10-year-old named Henry to whom Wendy gave birth and a 5-year-old named Ben, by the way, who's with us in the studio, to whom I gave birth. I'm like the documentary premiering at a gay film festival in Berlin." Judy, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, Reverend.
What's your conclusion? Did you still feel like after all of this that you're the only Jewish mother of your kind?
No. You know what? I realized that they're all different. Even though there were certain things that were similar, like there was always food when we went to interview these women. You know, we interviewed over 50 women all over the country. And the only things they had in common was that there was always something to eat and that they all spoke to their children daily or emailed, something of that nature. They all had contact with their children daily. But they were all completely different. And they all had these amazing stories, and it was incredible. It really, they changed my life.
So if all Jewish mothers are different from each other, are all Jewish mothers different from non-Jewish mothers?
Well, you know, that was our first question. We asked them, what makes a Jewish mother different from a non-Jewish mother? And, you know, we got these chicken soupy type answers. The guilt, we love our kids more, you know, we're overbearing. There is no difference. And, you know, I think the only overriding thing was that, number one, that, you know, I think the Jews have been kicked out of so many countries that this overprotectiveness comes down from generation to generation where they just want to know where their kids are. And I just think it's been happening for thousands of years and it's just passed down. But also, it was funny because after the show, people would come up to me and say, "I'm not Jewish, but I have a Jewish mother," or "I'm not Jewish, but I am a Jewish mother." So it really is a kind of a universal theme.
Now, you ask all of these women to identify their favorite Jewish woman. Well, what do you feel about them naming entertainers, some of whom are male, and they didn't name you?
I'm really upset about it, Reverend. I have not slept in weeks. No, I don't know. I don't care. You know what? If you ask Ben who his favorite Jewish mother is, and what would you say?
You.
See? There you go. You. That's all I need.
As, would he also say you're his favorite Jewish entertainer?
Who's your favorite Jewish entertainer?
You.
You
see?
Again. There we go.
Who's
okay.
the funniest person in the world?
You.
All right, then.
Okay. We're on a roll.
Thank you. I'll give you that money later.
What are some of the things that non-Jewish mothers would be surprised to learn from seeing your show or reading your book?
I think there are just details about, I think you learn stuff about how we do things, how Jews do death, how we eat, and just different thoughts. I mean, people definitely, I heard people when they would leave, they would say, well, I learned a lot. You know, they, there were certain issues because we dealt with, we interviewed women who were Orthodox, Reform, Black, White, Chinese, Holocaust survivors, children of Holocaust survivors. And, you know, their stories were incredibly fascinating. In the show, we only deal with 12 of the questions because otherwise I'd be on stage for like 4 hours. But the book is all 25 questions that we ask these women, and it's more of their stories. So I think they learned probably a lot about, you know, about what it's like to be a Jew and different kinds of Jews. Because we did, when we did the women in the show, it, we really also ran the gamut of religious, non-religious. I mean, there were some women who knew nothing about being Jewish. They were Jewish, but they had no idea. You know, we asked one woman if she would sit Shiva if her child married a non-Jew, which is what Jews do when someone dies. And she said, what's Shiva? Ba-doom, boom.
We're talking with Judy Gold, Jewish mother, Jewish entertainer, our guest on State of Belief. Now, a moment ago, you rushed by, you mentioned it, but then you rushed by a word that is near and dear to my heart. I'm a Protestant.
Right.
And you mentioned guilt. And
right.
So
Protestants have no guilt? What are
bull.
You, crazy?
Oh, you didn't know my
You're
mother.
You're a Protestant with guilt? Now,
absolutely.
You should write a book.
No, well, I could write a bunch of them. My mother could tell me she loved me, and I felt guilty. That I hadn't said it first, or that I wasn't pleasing her.
Okay, that is your issue, I've decided.
Okay, what's your issue with guilt?
I'm kidding.
What's your issue with guilt?
Well, you know, I feel guilty, too. Like, you know, I would forget my lunch, and I'd be like, in my head, oh, my God, she worked so hard on that lunch, and it's sitting in the refrigerator, and, you know. It was everything. I always felt bad, like I was doing something wrong, which is definitely her fault.
Well, so at the end of this whole process,
right?
What did you learn about your mother?
You know, it was incredible interviewing her because, you know, it's, well, a lot of the women, you know, you'd interview them and in the beginning they were a little timid, but once they started opening up, it was incredible. We had one man standing on the steps who said, you know, I've known these women for 40 years and tonight I feel like I've met them for the first time. And kids, you could see their kids listening in. And these are questions that no one has ever asked these women. And when we interviewed my mother, in the beginning, you know, she was doing a little jokey joke, but we had Kate do it. I sat there, but, and I learned so much about her dreams, you know, that were never fulfilled, her regrets. And you know, we asked, what's your biggest regret? What's the best piece of advice your mother gave you? And I learned about my mother as a person, as a flawed person, because, you know, you look at your parents as if they only exist because of you. They're here for you. They're here at your disposal, that they're like a superpower that just exists for you. And then when you realize, no, they're really people and they have a lot of faults and a lot of, you know, feelings that you don't even deal with, that was the most incredible thing, I think.
So what'd you learn about yourself?
Well, I learned that when I went to interview the very Orthodox, I was really defensive in my head, thinking they're going to be like this and they're going to be like that. And I'm not telling them I'm gay and they're going to be like this. And they were so open and so educated and so proactive. One of them was talking about her son. She had 5 kids. One of them was a special needs child and he went to yeshiva. They all went to yeshiva, and the yeshiva could not facilitate his needs. And she talked to her husband, and he came home from work, took care of the kids. She went back and got her master's degree and opened the first yeshiva for kids with special needs. And I thought, you know, your stockings are falling. I figure all you do is make soup and do whatever your husband tells you. And it was not like that. It was, I had gone in with the judgment, and they helped me to not judge myself and not judge them.
Now, you think about the whole project.
Mm-hmm.
Is there one joke that you would associate with this project? And
you mean a Jewish mother joke?
Yeah, and please let it be one that doesn't make me feel guilty, even though I'm not Jewish.
I mean, I do. I mean, there's a couple that I love. I mean, I love the how many Jewish mothers does it take to change a light bulb? None. I'll sit in the dock. Okay, that is one of my favorite. I'll stick with the I'll sit in the dark one. That is my favorite Jewish mother joke.
Ben, what's the funniest thing about your mom?
Better make it good. What's the funniest thing about me?
I don't know.
That's all right, because I'm not sure either.
What are you talking about, Reverend? I am hilarious.
I agree
Come
with
on,
that.
Ben. I am so fun with you and your friends.
Our guest has been Judy Gold.
Oh, I am so, you are so getting in trouble.
Co-author
for the rest of the day.
Of 25 Questions for a Jewish
Which
Mother.
Which is the perfect Mother's Day gift, by the way, Reverend.
I bet it is. And we will see if we can promote it again. Say it again.
25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, the perfect Mother's Day gift.
There you go. We've got a link on stateofbelief.com for you to get tickets to Judy's one-woman show. Judy, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you, Reverend.
And thanks for spending time with us on State of Belief.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's our show for this Sunday. Don't forget, we want to hear from you about that basketball story. Now, I tell you, we're not going to share what you say with the NBA officials calling the games. They already have too much control. Send us your emails at stateofbelief.com, where you can download this and other episodes of the show. Also, please visit interfaithalliance.org to find out how you can become a member and lend your support to this show. Next week, an inside look at Jehovah's Witnesses. Not at your front door, but at ours. What is and is not understood about that faith. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.
Out through the backyard we go walking, then he look into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.